In some of our previous episodes, I spoke to agencies and content creators about their approach to collaborating with brands. In this episode, I talked to Thando Gamboshe, an influencer marketing lead for a global FMCG brand. We delve into perspectives on influencer marketing from collaborations, searching for influencers, trends, and how they work with influencers.
Certain brands have purpose, and if the purpose of the brand aligns with that particular person, that's usually like a starting point, right? It's also, does this person create content that is within the area that the brand plays in?
This is The Lead Creative. Please share this episode, subscribe, and get the latest in creative industry thinking. Welcome to the Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Monge Zimtati. Enjoy the show and please share and subscribe. Thando, growing up, what would you say influenced you to end up where you did in terms of the work that you're doing today?
So I think when I was growing up, I was heavily led like by my parents in terms of the subjects that I did, the path that I followed. And I think even school itself, where, you know, in grade 10, when you start to like choose your subjects, I really wanted to do art and CAT at the time, because I really wanted to do graphic design, interior design, architecture. One of those things I would like pull in my left side of the brain and my right, but not enough people chose the subjects to be able to form those classes. So I was stuck with double science and double commerce. And when I went into varsity, I just didn't want to, I really didn't want to proceed on a back foot. So I didn't want to then change what I was going to do in varsity when I'd already studied these double commerce and double science subjects. So I went and studied commerce in varsity. In my first year in commerce, we basically do more or less everything is the same. But come second year, where we chose our majors, I decided that I needed a more creative major to do. So I chose marketing. And that's what led me to this path. But I did start off as an analyst. So very specialist in digital marketing. It was a digital marketing analytics specialist, to be specific. And I pivoted into the influencer marketing realm by really getting mentorship, doing flex roles, and essentially priming myself to be within that space. And it's worked out now.
That's a really that's a really interesting path to take, I think, into it. And I keep finding time and time again that marketers took, you know, some of the interesting curves and sort of journeys to end up where they did. Just to come back to this influencer marketing space that you now work in, right? 10 years ago, when you think about what brands were doing, there weren't influencer marketing leads, influencer marketing specialists in-house within the brands themselves. They worked a lot with agencies. And of course, today, someone like you is an influencer marketing lead within the FMCG space. How do you balance this client agency thing that usually happens between the client and agency when you're now working in-house?
So I think the coming of roles like my own has happened because obviously the landscape in marketing has changed, right? So it's basically us adapting to the changes in the market in any case. And I think roles like mine existing is because of that change. I think a lot of companies do want to have control over the comms that are going out there about their brands. And in order to do that, we have to take some of that control in-house, right? Our agencies really do execute our dreams and our visions and the fun things, but it also has to be met with the brand voice and the principles and ethics that we are attached to. And because of that, a role like mine exists to be able to enforce those things and make sure that they exist with everything that is said by our external partners. So like our influencers, as well as our agencies, because they are the ones who basically interact with them, share the briefs with them. But we need to make sure that the brand voice is also there and the brand values and ethics. Yeah. So that is a big reason why roles like myself exist, because they give that control factor within a space where we don't have full control over.
Sure. How do you decide, though, what influencers to work with from a brand perspective? What do you look for in an influencer that you decide that, okay, we'll give you brand X for this campaign, or we'll work on that with that influencer for brand Y? Because everybody is vying for the same kind of work, especially from an FMCG perspective. Influencers are vying for the same sort of work. How do you decide? Is it a numbers game? Is it their community? And how do you know what communities, you know, because what communities they kind of communicate with when an influencer works with one brand today and another tomorrow?
There's no perfect answer to your question, right? But it is a number of factors that come into play. But one of the first factors is really, is there alignment between the brand and that particular content creator or influencer? And alignment is shown in many different ways, right? Certain brands have purpose, and if the purpose of the brand aligns with that particular person, yeah, that's usually like a starting point, right? It's also, does this person create content that is within the area that the brand plays in? So for example, if it's a beauty brand, does this person create beauty content? And is that something that you can actually see when you visit their platforms from the onset, right? So that the brand isn't lost in what they ordinarily communicate, or they look like they're an outcast within that person's yeah platform. Another thing is someone who basically lives out the values of the brand as well. That's very, very important. I'm going to give an example for like yeah Dove. Dove stands for Real sure Beauty, right? And the likelihood of Dove partnering with somebody who nitpicks at how people look, how they look, and does not embrace being comfortable yeah in their skin, the likelihood of that partnership is slim sure to none, sure, really. So really, it is about that. I know a lot of people do think that it's a numbers mm-hmm game, but the numbers follow however you present yourself to your sure audience. And that's why that we have tiers, right? We have tiers of influencers. We have macros, micros, nanos, yeah, right? So there is a space for people with less followers. As long as you have an engaged audience that really believes in what yeah you're doing, then there's also a place for the brand to come in and be part of that community that you've built.
So a bit of a curveball then that I'd like to throw at you based on what you've just said, right? Live out mm-hmm the values of the brand, I think. And in a perfect world, I feel like that's true, right? But I also feel like Tando doesn't create content to live out the perfect values of whatever brand she loves. Like, she lives according to her values, and mm-hmm then brands try to merge mm-hmm their values mm-hmm to human values or vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. So how does a content creator creating content weekly, daily, or however often live out the values of a brand? Like, I'm trying to get my head around that. Like, as a marketer, I know what it means, but I'm also trying to get, like, we don't live our lives, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So how do we do that?
I get you. No, yeah, I definitely get you. So for me, I think a person needs to create content because they want to create content about a particular thing. That's where it all stems from. That sure is the foundation. The foundation is literally doing something that is in line with what you love, you enjoy, you're yeah passionate about, right? And I want to come in and say that, like, brands they leverage your platform for their communication or their key messages and whatever they want to share to your audience, who is essentially their consumer. But when you build your platform, I would even say that you should not build your platform with the intention of attracting different brands. There needs to be something more that you're doing for the people that follow you versus you just wanting brands to work with you. I can almost 90% say that if that's the way that you build your platform, the likelihood is failure, because you're doing it for the wrong reasons. And I think where there's no motivation, right, you need to be pushed by the passion to create for the community that you're creating for. So if you create a beauty platform, for example, because you are trying to learn how to do your makeup or take care of your skin, and now you're sharing that with other people so they have the information that you didn't have at that particular time, let that be what leads you. Not that you want Maybelline to work with you, because then are you really doing it for all the right reasons? I think, or rather, I would wish that the foundation of content creation and influencer marketing was the need to serve, really. I think it's the need to share information, share knowledge, and educate. I think that's what should be the foundation of this space, right? And I think when it comes to the way people build their platform, they sometimes chase money as opposed to that passion or that need to serve. And I think that's where some of the breakdown happens.
I like that. So this build from the need to serve, I think build from that foundation. And what I'm also getting a sense of from what you're saying is create the content that you create, keep creating. And as you create the content and as the quality of the content increases and improves, you and the brand somewhere will meet in your journeys, because the brand is looking for the kind of content that you're creating. Again, another curveball. We met at an influencer marketing conference. A lot of the questions that I heard being asked by existing influencers and would-be influencers is the drive to get brand partnerships. So it's almost like what you are saying is create and keep creating content. I know that you are also an influencer yourself and a content creator yourself, right? Like, I know that. So you're saying create, keep creating content. But on the opposite end of that, the person getting into this journey thinks that they should create to attract you as somebody who works within the brand. How do you balance that? What would you say to somebody on the opposite end of the spectrum thinking, you mentioned Dove, let's use that as an example, thinking that I want to one day work with Dove, so let me create content that attracts Dove. How do they do it?
I think it goes back to what I just said. Don't create content.
Yeah, so it's almost counterintuitive.
For me, it's...
I'm saying it's almost counterintuitive, right?
It is. I understand that it is counterintuitive. But like, for me, it's the same reason why people get discouraged, right? Because they're not using their platforms to fulfill themselves or the audience that they have. They're using it to fulfill whatever the brand, they believe the brand wants, you know? I think for me, for people who are upcoming creators, I already said, the foundation should be what drives you, what is your passion point, and what do you want to share with the world, right? That's the first thing. But I also think that beyond that, everything that you should do it authentically, right? And it's also not your job to draw in the eyes of brands. Your job is to just keep pushing the drive and what drives you, as well as the reason that you started, right? Brands instead will look at you and be like, I think that Tandoor would be a great influencer for my brand, because I can see from the content that she creates that she lives out the brand values. Right. And we can see that, and we can see a partnership with her because we fit seamlessly into the life that she already presents online. That's the job of like agencies. It's the job of the brand to outline in their brief the kind of people that they're looking for. And if you happen to be that person, then great. Yeah. But I do also believe in doing your research, yes. right? I think as you start to grow and you're like finding yourself within the creative space, and there's certain brands that you hope to start working with, you need to go and do your research and find out, what do these brands stand for? What are the other creators they've worked with, and what do they look like? What kind of content do they do? And if that resonates with you, you try and start to incorporate those things in your content, but authentically, yeah. you know? I like, it can't be someone who somehow like does fashion content. Now that they want to work with Dove, they completely drop all of the fashion content, yeah. and then they start to do self-care Sundays only and yeah. stuff like that. Where do you find the balance between sure. it, right? How about you include your getting ready routine from when you take a shower mm-hmm. and then you put on your moisturizer and your deodorant, instead of just starting fully like, okay, I'm getting dressed now. So now both your passion for fashion as well as self-care start to meet somewhere, and then you can start to attract the eyes of like a Dove yeah. brand, as well as the eyes of like a brand like H&M or Foschini.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
now that's meeting of the two places that you want to exist mm. in. And people grow, people change all the time. So even their tastes and what they want changes. So let's see that. I think being authentic is what I've seen grow a lot of accounts.
Yeah.
I've seen it with creators like Grace Mondlana. I've seen it with accounts like Prudy. They're being themselves, yeah. and that's what has drawn their audience in, right? But other places, like, people are very technical yeah. and they're able to talk about technicalities, show you how to create content, show you which equipment that you need to use to do this. And I think someone who's done that really well is Tandika Mawe. She's really in the beauty space, yeah. right? But she's also come in as someone who is very tech savvy, knows the equipment that you should be using for the best lighting, the best visuals. And then she merges, meets yeah, those two yeah, with yeah. within her content creation as
That's
well.
That's perfect. That's perfect. The other thing that comes up in these conversations is the issue of trust with influencers, because mm-hmm. as you've just said, some people are content creators and they create content every day and it's what they do. Other people do other things, are professionals in other ways, who also happen to create content around whatever their passions are. So then there's this issue of trust sometimes between influencers and just people, followers. I don't necessarily want to say they are followers, because their followers trust them, but generally influencers and just people in general, where because you like brand A today, tomorrow you work with brand B, which is brand A's competitor, on the you know, the next week you're doing something else. So this issue of trust becomes an issue. How do brands balance that? How do you balance that trust and authenticity thing that you've just mentioned, when influencers are sometimes known to work with different brands, sometimes competing brands?
So in terms of balancing trust, I think that when you sign someone on, already you're establishing mm. that trust. However, from a brand perspective, there are measures in place, right? When we select and onboard influencers, we have gone through a vetting process, right? And this is essentially taking that person's name and platforms and running them through a system that will basically tell us if they present a potential yeah. risk, right? Or if they have, I guess, a track record or some history of certain things coming into light that could put the brand in disrepute. But honestly, that's also something we don't have full control over, because at the end of the day, our creators are mm. human beings, and even going forward, they could make mistakes, even if they haven't made them historically, yeah. right? So that's one of the first measures, right? But the second measure, it's a legal one, where there's contracts sure. that are made between brand and creator. And usually they will stipulate the amount of time that you are contracted to mm-hmm. this brand, and the period in which you can then contract with a competitor, yeah. Or not contract with the competitor, right? And I think that differs between different organizations and their policies and legalities. However, those are some of the things that we do to guardrail from those things. But I do not believe that we should be contracting with people that we don't trust from the onset. And that trust exists between influencer and brand, as well as agency and brand, because they basically communicate our expectations. So I won't lie and say that there have not been instances where someone is currently working on a campaign for us, and then a couple of days, weeks later, they are on another paid campaign with a competitor. And that boils down to disclosure. That already means that trust has been broken, because our contracts definitely do say that if you're working with a competitor brand, please disclose it. If you have in the past three or 6 months, or are you intending to, so that we know that actually we can't pursue this work with you. And I think there's that element then of people want to be seen as though they are working a lot, but it doesn't only impact us as the brand, you working with multiple competitor brands in the same timeline, but it also does impact you in terms of credibility. And I feel like sometimes creators don't understand the impact that that has on them. I think there's always this thing where it's like we being brand have a problem with it, but you should also have a problem with it because it does stunt your credibility.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
So you do all of these things, right? You look for the right influencer, right content creator, have the contracts in place, and this seems like the perfect person. And then sometimes it just doesn't resonate with audiences. It just doesn't fly, right? Yeah. How do you avoid those kinds of pitfalls? Or how do you recover from them?
I think this is a good
point. How do you avoid them, and how do you recover?
How do you prevent?
Yeah, exactly.
And how do you
recover?
So I think this is where someone like me comes in. I hate to say it, but I am chronically online. Which also does present me as a good candidate for the job that I currently have, because there's certain elements that can't be done by tech, right? There's certain human element that's required in this kind of work, especially because it involves people, right? So as a preventative measure, I exist. I exist as a person who's like, well, that person will not resonate with this because they're just not aligned to what we're trying to communicate, right? And if I feel that way, the likelihood is that the audience that they're talking to will also be like, wait, what, this fit doesn't seem to make sense, right? So there's going to be a disconnect. So someone like me could easily pick it up, right? And that's why there's a need for someone like me. However, as a, I guess, a reactive measure, it's a you live and
for
you
sure,
learn,
for sure.
right? It's a test and learn kind of environment. If we couldn't preempt it and it does happen and it doesn't land, we've learned something. So it's, we sometimes call it in our organization failing forward, right? Where fine, it was a fail, but it isn't completely a fail because you've learned something that's going to help you in the future, right? But I do know there's extremes, right? Where certain alignments with creators end up being giving the brand as a whole a bad name, right? And in instances like that, it really is about the PR and calling in the right people to help manage the crises, right? And I know a lot of people come in and they just feel like, oh, the brand has let go of certain people based on what has happened. Why haven't they supported them? But at the end of the day, a business is being run. And when we enter into a legal obligation with someone, them meeting their end of the deal is them not putting our brand into disrepute, right? And there's certain things that the brand will stand for that aligns with the brand's values. But there's certain things that we definitely cannot, right? Because it's a matter of you've actually breached your contract. We haven't breached ours. We're just literally reacting to what has happened in the moment. And it's not a plain and simple, clean-cut process because it involves people, but things sometimes have to happen in a way that you don't expect. But the brand has to protect itself. And I think when creators come into play, they need to think about the fact that they're a brand themselves, as well as the brand that they're contracting with. And they need to conduct themselves in a manner where they respect their brand and they treat their brand with integrity, because then problems like that will not present themselves.
It's interesting that I think you mentioned the failures, and you mentioned you know, the things that sometimes brands need to protect themselves in instances when the influencer has put themselves or the brand in some sort of hot water. Are there instances, in your view, where you feel like a brand should back an influencer even when they're being quote unquote cancelled? Or should brands always just step away and let people sort themselves out? Like, you know, because there are these instances, and sometimes and sometimes it's for good reason that a person is being dragged, as the term is, online. And sometimes there are reasons where they are dragged and they have been unethical, right? So, and they should just deal with whatever they need to deal with. Are there instances when a brand can still work with the influencer and reasons when they shouldn't?
There's definitely instances where brands should back their people. And I'm going to be quite explicit in saying, like, let's say that the brand stands for diversity, not discriminating against age, sex, gender, or orientation. Yeah. If a brand says that they stand by that and someone is actually being dragged or currently being cancelled for any of the above, the brand needs to come and say that, actually, we're a brand that stands for, I'm going to use one word, inclusivity. Yeah. So you guys trying to cancel our partner on the basis of that is not going to fly, because we support whatever statements that this person has made, because they are for inclusivity. For sure. I'm actually going to maybe kind of be like specific in, like, because I know xenophobia is one of those things where people will just outright talk about it as if like it's just chit chatter when it's actually such a real issue, especially like in South Africa. And I've seen instances where people will say that because someone is not of like South African origin, they shouldn't be partnered with a local brand, for example. And then people go as far as tagging the brand and being like, why are you working with this person as opposed to someone who is from South Africa or the like? And those are instances in which the brand should stand up and say, hey, this person is a creator and this person lives in South Africa and is part of South African culture. They form part of our partners, and we will defend them and continue to partner with them because we support inclusivity. We support showing diversity within our brand. And this person stands for that, and they're actually part of our family. That's one instance where I'm like, a brand should stand up for their partners. Yeah. You know, I do not believe in brands completely shutting up when people are being dragged or cancelled, especially when it's something that the brand actually does stand for.
So once again, I think you're going back to the other side of our earlier part of the conversation, where you said the influencer should live out the brand values, and the opposite is the brand should also live out their brand values in actual facts, rather than just expecting it of influencers. There are other things that are being talked about in terms of attracting brands and brands attracting influencers, which is this area of having a rate card, approaching brands or approaching spaces that you work with, whereas on the other side of that, there are also agencies that work with influencers that deal directly with brands. As an influencer marketing lead at a brand, do you I'm sure you receive a lot of rate cards. Do you often start these deals and conversations from someone who sends you a rate card, or is it always that we contract an agency and the agency deals with the influencers, they give us a short list and we pick from the short list?
So someone like me dealing directly with that is unlikely. It usually is something that we let our agencies lead with, right? But like I said, our agencies will use like tools to find people who seem to fit whatever campaign brief they have. But someone like me, who's, like I said, chronically online, I'm also aware of people who would be good fits for the brand. So it's almost a collaborative space where maybe if I know one or two people that I've seen in my timeline before that I think would be a great fit, I will definitely suggest those names, and then we shortlist and see if between budget, between fit, and the deliverables that we actually need, is this person going to work? So there's many elements to it. Just because I can suggest someone's name doesn't mean they're a shoot-in, right? It just means that that person can be considered. I think recently there was someone that I've been seeing online for a while, and I was like, oh, this person's content is great, and I personally enjoyed it. But I had not seen a place for them within any of our campaigns. But when a campaign came up, I was like, that person would be great. And they didn't generally fit the mold of the brand, but they presented something new, fresh, modern, and relevant that can be molded into what the brand needs as well. Because I think beyond people just fitting into the exact mold of the brand, there are new elements that we need to add. That's why the influencer space changes, really, because there's always more happening, right? There's more techniques on how to shoot, more techniques on how to edit, and people coming with different ways of doing their content. And we need to take those into consideration to even adapt to make the brand more fresh, more modern, and current. Yeah.
You mentioned that the influencer marketing space is growing. Some research online says it's on the decline. And where do you see it going in the next 5-10 years?
That is a pretty tricky question, right?
Yeah.
But but you know what? It isn't the space particularly that's on the decline. Yeah. It's the fact that the space is getting more saturated. So because of that, as a creator, you definitely need to stand out in some way, shape, or form. So you, whatever was the foundation of you growing, the reason that people like you, you need to adapt to accommodate different tastes, new techniques, new styles, in order for you to stay relevant. I think the digital marketing and sort of influencer space kind of started with like millennials, but now Gen Zs are around, and they are a completely different market, and they're changing things and the way that we view them and the way that we consume them. So this space is a space where you need to always be learning and growing. So for creators, they need to always try and make sure that they stay relevant by finding out what are the new things, what can they implement, you know? And in terms of brands, like I said, we need those people to make the brand stay fresh and current, you know? So the industry itself is not on the decline. In fact, it's actually on the rise, even based on the fact that like AI is coming into place now as well. So because we're playing in a space that's always evolving, the digital space has leaps and bounds to grow. And this is just a pocket within the digital space, right? And what needs to happen, though, is that creators themselves need to be wary of the fact that there's a lot of people in the space. What are you doing differently? What are you doing that stands out that will make people continue to follow you and consume your content versus the next person who does the same thing?
If you could think back to one or two campaigns, maybe let's make it one campaign that you worked on recently that was hugely successful. What do you think made that campaign stand out in comparison to anything else that you've either done or seen in the past?
So I think I go back to knowledge, right? So I've found that when you pull in your creators to understand the brand and the product thoroughly, you're able to deliver great results, right? Excuse me. So we recently had an immersion on one of our brands, and this is basically where we bring our creators who are contracted onto the campaign, and they essentially sit in, they're in a session where they're taken through the brand values and why the brand exists, right? The changes that the brand has gone through over the years. And then over and above that, the product that the campaign will be based on. So what is the brief? What is the brand trying to do specifically? Yeah. So are we trying to gain share? Are we trying to increase volume? Are we just raising awareness, or do we want people to engage more with the product and the brand, right? And then also communicating how the creator is going to be able to do that for us. So it's really bringing the creator into the fold and making them understand thoroughly what they bring to the campaign and why we want them to be on this campaign. And then an added layer is a science layer. Yeah. It's the layer of how is the product formulated, and how does that formulation allow this product to work the way that it does and deliver on its claims and its benefits, right? And even go as far as bringing in R&D to actually do a demo on how the product actually works, so that the creators are empowered that when they speak on this product within their content, they don't have any question marks and doubts about the things that they're saying in their content. And it also gives the audience reason to believe in the product that they're talking about, because this person has all the knowledge about this product. You can tell that they understand it from the inside out, and they're essentially living the brand or the product, right? So I found that that's a very good foundation for starting brand campaigns. It allows the creator also to really feel like they've been brought into the fold, like they've been, they're part of the team, they're part of the family, and they are a partner and not just someone who's contracted to give us a particular service. So I think that has been one of the standout things that I've seen do a lot of good for our campaigns. It also minimizes reverts in terms of like when someone submits content and they've said the wrong thing, done the wrong thing. Very few reverts after you've immersed the creator on the campaign or the brand.
And I think that's a really great place as well to conclude, because I think you summarized everything that we've kind of spoken about as well in terms of how to bring influencers in and how to find these collaborations. Tando, we usually ask our guests to leave a question for our next guest, and you'll also get a chance to leave a question. Our previous guest, though, was the chairman of Bidvest and SBV Services, as well as the Chancellor of the University of the Free State, Professor Bonang Mohale. And this is the question that he left for you. He asks, how can we ensure that we not only create Black businesses or Black women-owned businesses, but that we actually set them up for success?
So I think first of all is identifying those Black service providers and Black women-owned service providers, first of all. But it's actually to take them through the process of what has worked and what hasn't. Let them know upfront what your expectations are, because it doesn't help to employ Black businesses, but then you don't fill them in on what has worked before and why you're actually bringing them in. Because I just feel like with certain skill sets, everyone can possess them, but what makes them different? What makes them better than the rest? And that is actually in providing them with the information for them to be different and do better. So it's not necessarily about it being a Black service provider, but it's actually in sharing that knowledge of, well, we've tried this before and it hasn't worked, right? A Black service provider or a non-Black service provider could do the same thing. But in order to empower you as a Black service provider, these are the things that I need to change. These are the things that I need to see being done differently. So we shouldn't gatekeep the thing that will make the Black service provider better. Be upfront, set your expectations, and make sure that they meet them. Because also for Black service providers, they need to take themselves seriously by delivering. Sure. That's what we need. I do think that you can get into the room by being a Black service provider, but how you stay in the room is how well you deliver. And that expectation needs to be put up front, that this is what we need from you in order for you to justify that you deserve the work that you're getting. So yeah, definitely transparency on what is required.
Yeah, transparency on what's required, empower them with our really good information, and for you to stay in the room, keep delivering. I like that. So, and then same question. So now you get to leave a question for our next guest. And the question is, what's the one question that you'd ask our next guest about their work, their creative process, thoughts on the industry, or even, I suppose, their work for that matter?
So this is particularly within the marketing industry, right?
Could be marketing, could be creativity, it could be advertising, or it could be any industry that they work in, because we don't know who our next guest is going to be. Yeah.
So for me, I think a big one is being disruptive, right? It's something that we talk about a lot as corporates, brands, but are we really living it, right? I think there's a certain fear with being disruptive. And for me, my biggest question is, how do we be disruptive without bulldozing societal norms and yet still remain acceptable within the corporate space, right? Maybe if I can rephrase it is, if there were no barriers on how disruptive you could be, what would you change? What would you disrupt? What would you completely change?
Wow, okay. Powerful question. Powerful question. And now the last question to you. If you could ask any living person about their take on marketing, creativity, or life, who would that person be? And what is the one question that you would ask them?
I know who the person would be. It's Mathebe Modise, who is the founder of Beauty on Tap and Pastry. Sure. In terms of question, it really has to do with being a Black woman working with a younger group of people, and how does she obtain knowledge and information from a younger group and then put it back into her business so that she essentially sets it up for success in this current landscape.
Fascinating question. Tando, thank you so much for making the time. This was a hugely insightful conversation. I think a lot for me to think about, because we in our own rights are also working to attract brands all the time from an agency perspective and also from a podcast perspective as well, right? So you've given us a lot of food for thought. Thank you for making the time.
Thank you so much, Mungezi.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mungezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mungezi.com.